No, but he should be. Unless, of course, he wants his dick cut off.
You sound like a mobster, not a future president. I jutted my chin out.
Both are positions of extreme power executed differently. You'd be surprised how many things they have in common.
Stop justifying your actions, I said.
Stop fighting your fate. You're not doing your father any favors. Even he wants you to submit.
How do you know that?
One of his magnificent mile properties caught fire this morning. 50 kilograms of cocaine straight from Europe. Poof. Gone. He can't contact the insurance until he cleans up the evidence, and by then they'll figure out he tampered with the scene. He just lost millions.
You did that, I accused, narrowing my eyes at him. He shrugged.
Drugs kill.
You did that so they'd tell me off, I said. He laughed.
Sweetheart, you're a nuisance at best and entirely not worth the risk.
Before I slapped him, or worse, I stormed outside, my anger following me like a shadow. I couldn't leave the house since I didn't have a car or anywhere to go, but I wanted to disappear. I ran out to the pavilion, where I broke down, falling to my knees and bawling my eyes out. I couldn't take it anymore. The combination of my father being a tyrant and Wolf trying to ruin my families and my life was too much. I rested my head against the cool white wood of the bench, wailing softly as I felt the fight leaving my body. A calming hand caressing my back. I was afraid to turn around, even though I knew in my gut that Wolf would never seek me out and try to make things better.
Do you need your gloves?
It was Ms. Sterling, her voice soft like cotton. I shook my head between my arms.
You know, he is just as confused and disoriented by your situation. Only difference is he's had years of perfecting how to hide his emotions.
I appreciated her trying to humanize my fiancé in my eyes, but it hardly worked.
I had the pleasure of raising Wolf. He was always a clever boy. He always wore his anger on his sleeve.
Her voice rang like bells as she drew lazy circles on my back, like my mom used to do when I was young. I kept quiet. I didn't care that Wolf had his own baggage. I'd done nothing to deserve his treatment.
You need to weather the storm, my dear. I think you'll find, after your adjustment period, that you two are so explosive together because you finally met your challenges in one another.
She sat on the bench above me, removing traces of my hair from my face. I looked up and blinked at her. I don't think anything can scare Senator Keaton.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
I think you give him a healthy dose of things to worry about. He did not expect you to be so... you.
What does that mean? Her face wrinkled as she considered her next words. Seeing as Wolf had obviously hired her because he felt attached to her after raising him, I at least had the hope in believing that one day he'd warm up to me too. She offered me her hands, and when I took them, she surprised me by pulling me up and standing up at the same time, drawing me in for a hug. We were both the same height, tiny, and she was even scrawnier than me. She spoke against my hair.
I think your love story started off on the wrong foot, but it will be magnificent precisely because of that. Wolf Keaton has walls, but you're already starting to break them. He is fighting it, and you.
Would you like the secret to disarming Wolf Keaton, my dear girl? I wasn't sure how to answer that, because a part of me sincerely feared that I would tear him to shreds given the opportunity, and I wouldn't be able to live with myself knowing I'd hurt someone so profoundly.
Yes, I heard myself say. Love him. He will be defenseless against your love.
With that, I felt her body disconnecting from mine, and she retreated to the glass doors, the vast mansion swallowing her figure. I took a deep breath. The man had just destroyed a building in which my father processed drugs, and half admitted it to me. That was more information than my father ever offered or admitted to. He also let me go to school. He also allowed me to leave whenever I pleased. I glanced at my wristwatch. It was 2 in the morning. Somehow, I'd spent 2 hours in the garden. 2 hours Wolf must have spent reading through every message I'd ever received. The late-night chill was seeping into my bones. Dejected, I turned to head back into the house. When I'd made my way back inside, I spotted Wolf standing on the threshold of the open door. He had one arm propped against its frame, blocking me from getting in. I took measured steps toward him. I stopped when I was a foot away. "Give me my phone back," I said. To my surprise, he reached into his back pocket and tossed it into my hands. I clutched it in my fist, still reeling from our latest fight, but also oddly touched by the fact he stayed awake and waited for me. He started his days at 5 in the morning, after all. "You're in my way," I rustled, trying to keep my teeth from chattering. He stared at me blankly.
"Push me away. Fight for what you want, Francesca."
I thought that's what made us enemies. A vicious smile found my lips. "Because I want to break free from you." It was his turn to smirk.
"Wanting and fighting are 2 different things. One is passive, the other active. Are we enemies, Nemesis?"
"What else can we be?"
"Allies. I'll scratch your back, you'll scratch mine."
"I'm all for not touching you ever again after last night," he shrugged.
"You might have been more believable if you hadn't grinded on me before I kicked you out of my bedroom. At any rate, you're welcome to come in, but I won't be making it easy for you, unless you give me your word Bandini is deleted from your phone and your life."
I got why he did that. He could have done it himself, but he wanted it to come from me. He didn't want another battle. He wanted my complete surrender. "Angelo will always be in my life. We grew up together, and just because you bought me doesn't mean you own me," I said evenly, even though really I had no intention of responding to Angelo's texts. More so since I'd heard that he was going on a second date with the vile Emily.
"Then I'm afraid you'll have to show some of your temper and fight me."
"Can I ask you something?" I rubbed my forehead tiredly.
"Certainly. Whether I'll answer or not is a completely different story."
His smirk grew more smug and mocking. "What's your leverage over my father? He obviously hates your guts, yet he won't claim me back, even after I told him I'm going to college. That'd put a huge strain on his reputation, as people will know that I am going against his wish. It must be quite substantial, then, if he'd rather have me in your bed than have you dish out the goods on him." I scanned his face, expecting him to rebuke and belittle me as my father had done earlier that day. Wolf surprised me again.
"Whatever I have on him could take away everything he's worked for. Not to mention throw him in jail for the rest of his miserable life. But your father didn't throw you to the dogs. He trusts me not to hurt you."
"Is that foolish of him?" I looked up. Wolf's muscular arm flexed under his shirt, a barely visible movement.
"I'm not a monster."
"Could have fooled me. Just tell me why," I whispered, the air rattling in my lungs. "Why do you hate him so much?"
"That's 2 questions. Go to bed."
"Move out of the way."
"Accomplishments are so much more rewarding when obstacles are in the way. Fight me, darling."
I snuck under his arm, ducking into the house and launching for the staircase. He caught me by the waist in one swift movement, pulling me into his arms and plastering me against his strong chest. His knuckles trailed down the length of my spine, and goosebumps burst all over my skin. His lips found my ear, hot and soft, in contrast to the harsh man they belonged to, his breath tickling my hair.
Maybe I am the monster. After all, I come out to play at night. But so do you, little one. You're out in the darkness, too.
Chapter 8 Wolf. Blowing up Arthur's property/meth lab and the coke with it was just another Tuesday. The work of saints was done through others, and mine had definitely been taken care of. The next 4 days were spent bending White's and Bishop's arms until they snapped and agreed to assign over 500 additional cops to be on duty at any given time to protect the streets of Chicago from the mess I'd created. It was going to blow up the bill to the sky, but it wasn't the state of Illinois that was going to shell out the money. The money was sitting firmly in White's and Bishop's pockets. Money given by my future father-in-law. Who, by the way, changed his tune from trying to coax his daughter into warming up to me and decided to repay me by throwing hundreds of pounds of trash in parks across Chicago. He couldn't do much more than that, considering all the juice I had on him. I was a power player. Touching what was mine, even scratching my car, came with a hefty price tag and would award him more unneeded attention from the FBI. I had the trash picked up by volunteers and thrown into his garden. That was when the phone calls began to pour in. Dozens of them. Like a needy, drunk ex-girlfriend on Valentine's Day, I didn't pick up. I was a senator. He was a highly connected mobster. I could marry his daughter, but I wouldn't listen to what he had to say. My job was to clean the streets he soiled with drugs, guns, and blood. I made a point to be at home as little as possible, which wasn't very hard between flying out to Springfield and D.C. frequently. Francesca was still adamant about having her dinners in her room. Not that I cared. She did, however, fulfill her commitments as far as cake tasting, trying on dresses, and doing all the other bullshit wedding planning I'd dumped on her. Not that I minded if she showed up in a goddamn oversized napkin. I didn't care for my fiancé's affection. As far as I was concerned, with the exception of amending the no fucking other people clause before my balls fell off, she could live on her side of the house, or better yet, across town, until her last breath. On the fifth day, after dinner, I buried myself in paperwork in my office when Sterling summoned me to the kitchen. It was well past 11 o'clock, and Sterling knew better than to interrupt me in general, so I figured it was of critical importance. Last thing I needed was hearing that Nemesis was planning an escape. It seemed like Francesca had finally realized she didn't have an out from this arrangement. I descended the stairs. When I reached the landing, the smell of sugar, baked dough, and chocolate wafted from the kitchen. Sweet, sticky, and nostalgic in a way that sliced through your body like a knife. I stopped at the threshold and examined tiny, fierce Sterling as she served a simple chocolate cake with 46 candles on the long dining table. Her hands were shaking. She wiped them on her stained apron the minute I walked in, refusing eye contact. We both knew why.
"Romeo's birthday,"
she mumbled under her breath, hurrying to the sink to wash her hands. I ambled in, dragged over a chair, and sank into it, watching the cake as if it was my opponent. I wasn't particularly sentimental and exceptionally bad with remembering dates, which was just as well as all my family members were dead. Their death dates, however, I remembered. I also remembered the cause of their deaths. Sterling handed me a plate on which she'd piled enough cake to clog a toilet bowl. I was torn between thanking her for paying her respects to the person I loved the most and yelling at her for reminding me that my heart had a hole the size of Arthur Rossi's fist. I settled for stuffing my mouth with cake without tasting it. Sugar consumption was not a habit of mine, but it seemed excessively spiteful not to take a bite after she went through so much trouble.
"He would have been proud of you if he were alive."
She lowered herself onto the seat in front of mine, wrapping her hands around a steamy cup of herbal tea. My back was to the kitchen door. She faced it, and me. I stabbed a fork into my cake, unfolding the layers of the chocolate and sugar like they were a human gut, digging harder with each motion.
"Wolf, look at me."
I dragged my eyes to her face, pacifying her for a reason beyond my grasp. It was not in my nature to be nice and cordial, but something in that demanded an emotion from me that wasn't disdain. Her eyes widened, dotted sky blue. She was trying to tell me something.
"Be gentle with her, Wolf."
That would give her false hope that what we have is real, and that's entirely too cruel, even by my standards. I drawled, pushing the cake across the table.
"She's lonely. She's young, isolated, and frightened to the bone. You're treating her like an enemy before she even lets you down. All she knows about you is that you're a powerful man, you hate her family, and don't want anything to do with her. Yet you made it clear that you'll never let her go. She is a prisoner," she finished simply, "for a crime she did not commit.
It's called collateral." I laced my fingers behind my head and sat back. "And it's not very different from the life she would have led with anyone else. With the exception that, unlike the majority of made men, I'd spare her the lies when I cheated on her." Sterling winced as though I'd struck her across the face. She then leaned across the table and took my hand in hers. It took everything in me not to withdraw. I hated touching people in any capacity in which my cock wasn't in one of their holes, and Sterling was the last person on the entire planet I'd fuck. Not to mention, I particularly disliked it when she exhibited her feelings openly. It was inappropriate and way out of her job description.
"Choosing something doomed and being forced into it are two very different things. Showing her mercy will not weaken you. If anything, it will assure her you're confident in your power."
She sounded like Oprah. "What do you have in mind?" I sneered. If I could throw money at Francesca and send her off on a shopping spree in Europe to spend some time with her cousin Andrea and get her out of my hair, I would do it in a heartbeat. At this point, I even considered Cabo as an option. It was still on the same continent, but far enough away from here.
"Take her to her parents."
"Have you been drinking?" I stared at her blankly. I hoped not. Sterling and alcohol were a lethal combination.
"Why not?"
"Because the reason I'm celebrating Romeo's birthday without Romeo's presence is due to her father."
"She is not her father!"
Sterling darted up to her feet. Her palm crashed on the table, producing an explosive sound I didn't know she was capable of. The fork on my plate rattled and flew across the table. "His blood is running through her veins. That's contaminated enough for me," I said dryly.
"But not enough to prevent you from wanting to touch her,"
she taunted. I smiled. "Tainting what's his would be a nice bonus." I stood. A vase fell to the ground behind me, no doubt knocked down by my future wife. Bare feet jogged across the dark wooden floors, pitter-pattering as they slapped the stairs on her way back to her wing. I left Sterling in the kitchen to stew in her anger and followed my bride-to-be up with deliberate leisure. I stopped on the cleft between the west and the east wing when I reached the top floor, before deciding to retire back to my office. no point in trying to pacify her. At 3 in the morning, after answering every email personally, including replying to concerned citizens about the state of Illinois' tomatoes, I decided to check on Nemesis. I hated that she was a night owl since I had to wake up every day at 4, but she seemed to like getting out of the coop at nighttime. Knowing my quirky bride-to-be, it was not out of the question for her to try to escape her cage. She certainly made a habit of rattling the bars. I strolled to her room and pushed the door open without knocking. The room was empty. Rage began to course inside my veins, and I bit down on a curse. I moved to her window, and sure enough, she was downstairs, a cigarette dangling from the corner of her pink, pouty mouth, weeding a vegetable garden that wasn't there before I threw her in the east wing and left her to her own devices.
"With a little bit of hope and a lot of love, you will make it to winter," she told the radishes.
And was she talking about herself or them? Her conversing with vegetables was a new and disturbing twist in her already awkward personality.
"Be good for me, okay? Because he won't.
You hardly make the cut for Fiancé of the Year either, Nem.
Do you think he'd ever tell me whose birthday it was?"
She crouched down, fingering the lettuce heads. "No, he won't."
"Yeah, I don't think so either,"
she sighed.
"But anyway, you drink some water. I'll come check on you tomorrow morning, for lack of anything better to do."
She chuckled, rising up and putting her cigarette out against a wooden passageway. Nem had been sending Smithy to buy her a pack a day. I made a mental note to tell her the wife of a senator was not allowed to puff like a chimney in public. I waited a few moments and made my way to the corridor, expecting the balcony doors to slide open and to catch her going up the stairs. After waiting for long minutes, something I despised doing with every bone in my body, I descended the stairs, making my way to the terrace. Her disappearing act was grating on my nerves. First, she broke Romeo's picture, and now she snooped around and talked to her future salad. I pushed the balcony doors open, ready to roar at her to go to bed, when I found her at the far end of the garden. She was in the open, second shed where we kept our trash cans. Great. She was talking to garbage now, too. I made my way to her, noticing that leaves were no longer crunching under my loafers. The garden was in much better shape. She had her back to me, bending into one of the green recycling cans surrounded by garbage. There was no way to sugarcoat what I was seeing here. She was going through the trash. I walked in the open door, leaning against it with my hands stuffed inside my front pockets. I watched as she sorted through bags of trash, then cleared my throat, making myself known. She jumped, gasping. "Looking for a snack?" She placed a palm on her chest over her heart and shook her head.
Miss Sterling said that the clothes that I,
ruined, I offered.
"Yeah, they're still here. Some of them, anyway."
She gestured to the heaps of clothes at her feet.
"They're going to send them to charity tomorrow. Most of the items are salvageable, so I figured if the clothes are still here, then maybe..."
The picture was still here. She was trying to save Romeo's picture without knowing who he was after seeing Sterling and me celebrating his birthday. She didn't know that she wouldn't find it. I asked Sterling, who confirmed that the batch with the picture had been already taken away. I raked a hand over my face. I wanted to kick something. Surprisingly, she wasn't that something. Heartache and regret etched her face as she turned around and looked at me with eyes raw with emotion. She understood she not only ripped fabric, fuck the fabric, but also something deep inside me. Tears hung on her eyelashes. It struck me as ironic that I'd spent my entire adult life choosing cold-blooded, unsentimental women for my flings, only to get married to a complete wuss. Leave it alone. I waved her off. I don't need your pity, Nemesis.
I'm not trying to give you pity, villain. I'm trying to give you comfort.
I don't want that either. I don't want anything from you other than your obedience. And maybe down the road, your pussy.
Why must you be so crass?
Tears made her eyes shimmer. She was a crier, too. Could we be any less compatible? I didn't think so. Why must you be such an emotional train wreck? I responded curtly, pushing off the door and getting ready to leave. We are who we are.
We are who we choose to be,
she corrected, throwing a piece of clothing at her feet.
And unlike you, I choose to feel.
Go to bed, Francesca. We're going to visit your parents tomorrow, and I'd appreciate you hanging on my arm without looking like shit.
We are?
Her mouth hung open. We are. My version of accepting her apology. My version of letting her know I wasn't a monster. Not that night, anyway. The night that marked the birthday of the man who taught me how to be good, and as a homage, I allowed this one small crack in my shield, giving her a hint of warmth. My dead brother was a good man. But me, I was a great villain.
Chapter 9. Francesca. Just tell me who it was. An ex-girlfriend? A missing cousin? Who? Who? I probed Ms. Sterling the next day, between tending to my vegetable garden, chain-smoking, and looking through the trash for the broken picture, the one thing my future husband cared about, and I somehow managed to ruin. I was met with stern, snippy answers. She explained, between huffs and phone calls, barking at the cleaning company once again, that if I wanted to learn more about Wolf's life, I needed to earn his trust. Earn his trust? I can't even earn a smile from him. Have you actually tried making him smile? She squinted, checking my face for lies. Should I have? He practically kidnapped me. He also saved you from your parents. I didn't want to be saved. Two things people should be grateful for without asking. Love and to be saved. You are offered both. Yet, my dear, you seem quite ungracious. Miss Sterling, I deduced, was senile to the bone. She sounded so different from the woman who persuaded my future husband to show me mercy yesterday when I eavesdropped on them. I saw through her game, trying to defrost us toward one another while always playing the devil's advocate. I thought she was wasting her time, on both ends. Still, bickering with Ms. Sterling was the best part of my day. She showed more passion and involvement in my life than Wolf and my father combined. My fiancé and I were to arrive at my parents' house at 6 o'clock for dinner, our first dinner as an engaged couple. Ms. Sterling said that showing my folks I was happy and taken care of the essence. She aided me with the preparations, helping me slide into a yellow maxi summer chiffon dress and matching Jimmy Choo sandaled heels. When she fixed my hair in front of the mirror, it dawned on me that our light banter about the weather, my love for horses, and her love for romance books reminded me a lot of my connection with Clara. Something that felt a lot like hope started blooming in my chest. Having a friend would make living here so much more bearable. My new beau, of course, must have sensed my cautious optimism, because he decided to crush and burn it by sending me a text message. We'll be late. Meet you there. No pulling tricks, Nem. He couldn't even show up on time to our first dinner with my parents. And, of course, he still thought I'd try to run away somehow. Heat bubbled in my veins throughout the drive. The black Escalade pulled up to my parents' curb, and Mama and Clara hurried outside, showering me with hugs and kisses as if I'd just returned from a war zone. My father was standing at the doorway in his sharp suit, frowning at my nearing figure as I laced my arms with the women of my former household as we walked in. I daren't meet his eyes. When I took the 4 steps up to our entrance door, he merely moved aside to let me pass, not offering me a hug, a kiss, or even a pleasantry. I looked the other way. Our shoulders brushed, and it felt like his sliced mine with its rigid, icy stance.
"You look beautiful, Vita Mia,"
Mama breathed behind me, pulling at the hem of my dress. "Freedom agrees with me," I bit out bitterly, my back to Papa, as I went to the dining room and poured myself a glass of wine before Wolf arrived. The next hour was spent making idle conversation with my mother, while my father nursed a glass of brandy and stared me down from across the room. Clara came and went out of the salon, providing refreshments and zeppole to curb our hunger. "Something smells," I scrunched my nose.
"That would be your fiancé,"
my father said, sitting back in his executive chair. My mother laughed off his words.
"We had a bit of an incident in the backyard. It's fine now."
Another hour vanished, washed away by a stream of words as my mother brought my father and me up to date with all the latest gossip regarding the desperate housewives of the outfit. Who got married and who got divorced, who was cheating and who was being cheated on. Angelo's little brother wanted to propose to his girlfriend, but Mike Bandini, his father, thought it to be a problematic announcement, especially as Angelo didn't have any prospects to marry anyone anytime soon. Thanks to me. Mom bit her lower lip when she realized it sounded a lot like an accusation, fiddling with the hem of her sleeve. She did that a lot. I chucked it to her low self-esteem after years of being married to my father.
"Of course, Angelo will move on," she swatted the air.
"Think before you speak, Sophia. It would serve you well," he advised.
When the grandfather clock chimed for the 2nd time that evening, announcing it was 8 o'clock, we moved to the dining room and began to eat our starters. I did not make any excuses for Wolf, since all my text messages to him went unanswered. My heart was soggy with shame and drenched with disappointment at the humiliation of being stood up by the man who ripped me from my family. The 3 of us ate with our heads bowed down, the clinking of the salt and pepper shakers and utensils unbearably loud against the silence in the room. My mind drifted back to the notes in the wooden box. I had decided that this was all a mistake. Senator Keaton couldn't be the love of my life. The hate of my life? Absolutely. Anything more than that was a stretch. When Clara served us the reheated entrees shortly before the doorbell rang, instead of feeling relieved, more dread poured into me, heavy like lead. The 3 of us put our forks down and exchanged glances. What now?
"Well then, that's a pleasant surprise." Mama clapped her hands once.
"No more than cancer."
My father patted the sides of his mouth with a napkin. Wolf came in a short minute later in a tailored suit, black raven hair tousled to a fault, and a purposeful expression that flirted with menace.
"Senator Keaton,"
Papa sneered, not looking up from his dish of homemade lasagna.
"I see you finally decided to grace us with your presence."
Wolf dropped a casual kiss on the crown of my head, and I hated the way silken satin wrapped around my heart and squeezed it with delight. I despised him for being so late and careless, and myself for foolishly melting, just because of the way his lips felt on my hair. My father watched the scene from the corner of his eye, one side of his mouth upturned in amused satisfaction. "You're miserable, Francesca, aren't you?" his eyes taunted.
Yes, Papa. Yes, I am. Good job.
What took you so long? I whisper shouted, bumping Wolf's hard thigh with my own underneath the table as he took a seat.
Business, he clipped, flapping his napkin over his lap in a whip-sharp movement and taking a generous sip of his wine.
So, not only do you work all day,
my father launched into the conversation in full swing, sitting back and knotting his fingers together on the table.
But you're sending off my daughter to college now. Are you planning on providing us with grandchildren anytime this decade?
He inquired flatly, not giving a damn this way or the other. I saw through my father's behavior and knew without a shadow of a doubt this was not only about my college education. In the time that passed between my leaving the house and now, he'd had the chance to process everything. Wolf Keaton's future children, no matter how much of the Rossi blood ran in their veins, would never inherit Papa's business. Senator Keaton would not let it happen. And so my marriage to Wolf not only killed his dream of a perfect little daughter raising beautiful, well-behaved, ruthless children, but it also killed his legacy. My father was slowly beginning to disconnect from me emotionally to protect his own heart from hurting, yet he was breaking mine to pieces in the process. My gaze darted to Wolf, who glanced at his Cartier, visibly waiting for dinner to be over.
Ask your daughter. She's in charge of her school schedule, and her womb. Quite true, to my utter disappointment. Women need real men to tell them what they want. Left to their own devices, they are bound to make reckless mistakes. Real men don't shit bricks when their wives gain higher education and the basic power to survive without them. Pardon my language.
Wolf chewed a mouthful of lasagna, signaling me with his hand to pass him the pepper. He was in hostile territory, looking as cool as a cucumber. All righty now, Mama chortled, tapping my father's hand from across the table. Has anyone heard the latest gossip about the governor's wife's latest facelift? Word around town is she looks permanently surprised, and not by his tax scandal.
What will you be studying, Francesca?
Papa turned his attention to me, cutting into Mama's speech.
Surely you don't actually believe you can become a lawyer.
I accidentally dropped my fork onto my lasagna. Small splashes of tomato flew on my yellow dress. I dabbed at the stains with a napkin, swallowing a pool of saliva that gathered in my mouth.
You can't even eat a damn meal without making a mess, my father pointed out, stabbing his lasagna with unabashed violence.
That's because my father is belittling me in front of my fiancé and mother, I squared my shoulders. Not because I'm incapable.
You are of average IQ, Francesca. You can become a lawyer, but probably not a good one. And you haven't worked a day in your life. You would make a lazy intern and get fired. Wasting everyone's time and resources, including your own. Not to mention, the opportunity you'd receive being Senator Keaton's wife could go to someone who actually deserves the job. Nepotism is America's number one disease. I thought that was organized crime,
Wolf commented, taking another sip of his wine.
And you?
My father looked at my future husband with an expression that would have stapled me to the wall had it been directed at me. Yet my husband stayed aloof as ever.
I would strongly advise that you stop your antics. You got what you wanted. May I remind you that I came from nothing. I'm not going to sit around and watch you ruin all I have. I'm a very resourceful man. Threat noted,
Wolf chuckled. So I should just stay at home and pop out babies? I pushed my plate away, fed up with the food, conversation, and company. My mother's gaze ping-ponged among everyone, her eyes wide as saucers. It was all a big mess, and I was in the middle of it. My father threw his napkin over his plate to signal to the servants that he was done. Two of them rushed over to clear his plate, nodding and nodding and nodding. Scared.
That'd be a good start. Although with a husband like yours, God knows.
A husband you chose. I speared something with my fork, imagining it was his heart.
Before I knew he was going to make you go out and work like some kind of...
21st century woman? I finished for him, my eyebrows jumping to my hairline. Wolf chuckled into his wine glass next to me, his quaking shoulder brushing mine. My father knocked down his drink, then followed it by topping his glass to the hilt. His nose grew redder and rounder, his cheeks pinking under the yellow hues of the chandelier light. My father always drank responsibly. He didn't tonight.
Your boarding school was an expensive, elaborate daycare for the rich and connected. Your doing well in Switzerland is no indication you can survive the real world.
That's because you sheltered me from the real world.
No, that's because you can't handle the real world.
He grabbed his full glass of wine and tossed it across the room. The glass broke into tiny pieces as it hit the wall, the red wine spreading on the carpets and wallpaper like blood. Wolf stood, braced his hands over the table, and leaned forward, staring Papa in the eye. The world ceased to spin, and everyone in the room seemed to appear significantly smaller, holding their breath and staring at my fiancé. The air fluttered behind my lungs.
This is the last time you raise your voice to my fiancé, not to mention throw things around like a poorly trained circus monkey. Nobody, and I do mean no person on this planet, talks to the future Mrs. Keaton like this. Any wrath she is to endure is mine. The only person she answers to is me. The only man to put her in her place, if and when needed, would be me. You will be respectful, agreeable, and polite to her. Tell me if I'm not understood, and I'll make sure to make my point by destroying everything you care about.
The air felt thick and heavy with the threat, and I was no longer sure where my loyalty lay. I hated both of them, but had to root for one of them. It was my future on the line, after all.
Mario!
My father called out his security. Was he throwing us out? I didn't want to be there when it happened. Couldn't face the humiliation of being thrown out of my own house. I stared at my father's eyes. The same eyes that glittered with pride and respect not too long ago every time I entered the room as he ricocheted dreams of my marrying into a good Italian outfit family and filling this house with happy, privileged grandchildren. They were empty. I shot up from my seat, my legs padding across the carpets. I had no direction. Tears blurred my vision as my feet carried me to the drawing room on the first floor, on the other side of the house where the grand piano sat. I wiped my face quickly, tucking myself behind the piano, gathering the tulle of my summer dress to make sure I wasn't visible to anyone walking into the room. It was a childish thing to do, but I didn't want to be found. I wrapped my hands around my legs and buried my face between my knees. My whole body trembled as I sobbed into my thighs. Minutes passed before I felt someone else enter the room. It was pointless to look up. Whomever it was, they were an unwelcome company.
Lift your head.
God, my pulse jumped at his voice. Why him? I remained motionless. His footsteps carried across the room, becoming louder as he made his way toward me. When I finally peeked from behind my knees, I found my fiancé crouching down in front of me with a grave look on his face. He'd found me. I didn't know how, but he did. Not my mother, not my father, not Clara. Him. What took you so long? I lashed out at him, dragging the pads of my fingers across my cheeks. I felt childish, seeking his alliance, but he was the only one who could. Mama and Clara meant well, but lacked any sort of power over my father.
Work.
Work could have waited until tomorrow.
It could have until your father got into the picture.
His jaw clenched.
I had a meeting at a bar called Murphy's. I left my briefcase there. It disappeared from my side, then a mysterious fire started in the kitchen, spreading to the rest of the pub soon after. Take a wild guess what happened.
I blinked at him. The Italian and the Irish have had a rivalry dated back to the early 20s in this town. He arched an eyebrow.
Your father had my briefcase stolen and burned. He wanted to destroy the evidence I have on him.
Did he succeed?
What kind of idiot keeps his most valuable possession in one place without any spare copies and walks around with it in broad daylight?
The kind of people my father messes with. Are you going to tell him? I sniffed.
I'd rather keep him guessing. It's thoroughly entertaining.
He's not going to stop, then.
Good. Neither will I.
I knew he spoke the truth. I also knew that it was more truth than I could ever squeeze out of my father. The pieces of the puzzle fell into place. Papa orchestrated this evening to be a disaster. He wanted to destroy whatever Wolf had on him, and the fact I was left waiting while Wolf had to extinguish another potential PR disaster was a nice, fat bonus. I hate him. I stared at the floor, the words exploding from my mouth bitterly. I meant it with every bone and ounce of blood in my body.
I know.
Wolf settled in front of me, crossing his long, muscular legs at the ankles. I glanced at the cut of his dress pants. No hint of socks. Tailor-made to his exact height and frame, just like everything else about him. A man so calculated, I decided, was going to hit back harder once he decided to punish my father. And my father wouldn't stop until he dismantled him. One of them was going to kill the other, and I was the poor idiot stuck right in the middle of their war. I closed my eyes, trying to muster the mental strength to walk out of this room and face my parents. Everything was such a mess. I am an unwanted puppy, running from door to door in the pouring rain, looking for shelter. Slowly, and despite my better judgment, I crawled into my future husband's lap. I knew that by doing that, I was raising a white flag, surrendering to him, seeking his protection, both from my father and from my own internal turmoil. I flew directly into my cage, asking him to lock me inside, because the beautiful lie was far more desirable than the awful truth. The cage was warm and safe. No harm could find me. I wrapped my arms around his neck, burying my head in his steel chest and holding my breath to prevent the next sob. He stiffened, his body rigid with our sudden proximity. I thought about what Ms. Sterling said about killing him with kindness, defeating him with love. Break. Crack. Feel me. Accept me. I felt his arms slowly enveloping my body as he acknowledged my surrender, opened the gates, and let my army skulk into his kingdom, wounded and famished. He lowered his head and cupped both my cheeks, tilting my head up. Our eyes locked. We were so close, I could see the unique silvery shade of his irises. Pale and frightening like the planet Mercury, with icy blue speckles inside the craters. I knew instantly that there was a chink in his indifferent mask, and that it was my job to worm my way through the crack and plant my seeds there. Grow them like my vegetable garden, and hope like hell they could bloom. He tipped his head forward, molding our mouths together, our lips meeting like they already knew each other. I realized, and not to my discomfort, that they did. It was a discreet, bolstering kiss. For long minutes, we explored each other with cautious strokes. The only audible noise was our lips and tongue, licking wounds more than skin deep. When we disconnected, my heart twisted in my chest. I was afraid he was going to leave the room angrily like he did the last time we'd kissed. But he just brushed his thumb over my cheek and scanned my face with a dark frown.
"Have you had enough of your father for the week, Nim?"
I took a shuddering breath. "I think I've had my fill for the year."
"Good. Because I'm beginning to think I haven't had enough of my fiancé, and I'd like to rectify that."
During the drive back home, Wolf slid his fingers through mine, clasping my palm and pressing it down on his muscular thigh. I looked out the window, the small smile on my lips a telltale I chose to ignore. After we left my parents' piano room, my mother apologized profusely for the disastrous dinner. My father was nowhere in sight. His driver pulled up to the curb while she was making excuses, and he probably went someplace where he could plot against my future husband. Not that said fiancé looked particularly bothered by the situation. I hugged Mama and told her that I loved her. I meant it, even though I recognized that my entire perception of her had changed. Growing up, I truly believed that my mother could protect me from anything, even death. I did not think so anymore. In fact, a small, frightened part of me speculated that the day where I'd have to protect her was near. I vowed to never do this to my own child. When I had a daughter, I would protect her from anyone, even from her father, even from our legacy, even from wooden boxes with decades of tradition. Wolf helped me into my casual wool jacket and pierced my mother with a look she didn't deserve. Now, in the vehicle, his hand covering mine, he dragged my palm deeper into his inner thigh, much too near to his groin. My own thighs clenched together, but I didn't pull back. There was one thing I could neither deny, nor did I care to at this point. My future husband stirred a physical reaction in me. With Angelo, I felt warm and fuzzy, under a rich blanket of security. With Wolf, I felt as if I was on fire, as though he could end me at any given moment, and all I could do was hope for his mercy. I felt safe, but not secure. Desired, but unwanted. Admired, but unloved. When we got to the house, Ms. Sterling was sitting in the kitchen, reading a historical romance. I walked in to get a glass of water, with Wolf following me. As soon as her eyes snapped up from the yellowed pages, she angled her reading glasses down the bridge of her nose and grinned.
"How was your evening?"
She batted her lashes, feigning innocence.
"Pleasant, I take it."
The fact that we entered a room together for the first time since we'd known each other probably gave our truce away.
"Get out," Wolf ordered,
no menace or manners in his voice. Ms. Sterling hopped out, giggling to herself, as I poured myself a glass of water, refusing to spare him a look. We'd come here because he wanted to spend more time with me. I had no doubt it was neither my wit nor conversation he was after. The finality of what was going to happen between us hit me somewhere between the heart and the womb, sending waves of passion and panic through my body.
"Care for some water?"
My voice pitched high. My back was still to him. Wolf covered my body with his from behind, running his fingers from the side of my thigh to my midriff. He cupped my small breast, making me gasp in shock and unexplained pleasure. His warm lips were on my shoulder, and I felt him stiffening behind me, his erection pressing against my butt. My heart fluttered behind my ribcage like a butterfly. Oh my God, he was firm and hot everywhere, and the sensation of being shielded by him made me feel both helpless and invincible. I drank my water in measured gulps, biding my time, as his fingers pinched one of my nipples through my dress and bra. I groaned, my back arching involuntarily, and I had to put the glass down on the counter before it slipped between my fingers. He chuckled, his hand sliding down my leg again and snaking through the side slit of my dress. His fingertips brushed the hem of my cotton underwear, and he grumbled into my ear, making my skin break into violent goosebumps. Instead of running for my life, something every bone in my body screamed at me to do, I found myself wanting to dissolve in his arms. I was the idiot who told him I wasn't a virgin. Now I had to deal with the consequences of my stupid lie. "Water?" I muttered again, horrified when I felt my panties sticking to my skin from the dampness. My body felt rebellious and adventurous under his fingertips, but my mind told me we were still rivals. He thrust his penis between my butt cheeks through my dress, and I moaned, my hip bones slamming against the counter. The pain of the hit was laced with delight I couldn't understand. Part of me wanted him to do it again. "The only thing I'm in the mood for right now is my bride-to-be." "Huh." I looked at the ceiling, racking my brain for something to say. Was he going to take me from behind like some kind of animal? Sex was a foreign land I had yet to set foot on. I had plenty of time to surf the internet and read all about my future husband. He was a womanizer and had more than his fair share of girlfriends and flings. They were always well-educated, leggy socialites with shiny hair and an envious family tree. They always hung on his arms in the tabloids, staring at his face as though it was a rare gift he'd offered just for them. But among the squeaky clean items about him, I'd also found a lot of headlines that flirted with a scandal. Hotel rooms with a trash can full of used condoms, a restroom incident at a gala thrown by his political party, and he'd even been locked in a car with a European princess for 2 hours, much to her family and country's disdain. "We need to take this slow. I don't know you yet." My hand trembled its way to his shoulder, pushing him awkwardly with no real force in my touch. I was still with my back to him.
"Getting in bed together will help rectify that," he pointed out.
I wished I'd stopped to think before I taunted him about sleeping with Angelo. But the lie got bigger and more important the more time passed. He spun me around so I faced him and shoved me flush against the counter. I was both amazed and disturbed by how easily he manhandled me. "Slow," I repeated, my voice quivering around the word.
"Slow," he echoed,
hoisting me up on the counter. He stepped between my legs as if he'd done it 1,000 times before. And he had, just not with me. My dress rode up, and if he looked down, which he did, of course he did, he could see my matching yellow panties and the unmistakable stain of lust where the slit was. He cupped my behind in a punishing grip, slamming our groins together, and my breath hitched at the thing that met my damp panties. My very damp panties. I was soaked, embarrassed to the bone. I hoped he wasn't going to touch me down there because that would only prove to him how much I craved him. My eyelids lowered, heavy under the weight of my desire for him. He put his lips on mine and kissed me long and hard, plunging into my mouth in a rhythm that made a ball of something warm and brilliant swell in my womb. He crushed his body against mine and rubbed his swollen cock against my center, and I dragged my fingers over his back like I'd seen women do in the movies, enjoying the power of touching him however I liked. It felt good, and I didn't want to think about anything else. Like how we were a lie. Or how the lie felt better than the truth, the reality of my life. I pushed aside my feelings for my father, and my missing Angelo, and the worry for Mama. It was just the two of us, tucked in a bubble I knew was bound to burst.